Began a new series last week called The Radical Teachings of Jesus. Again, that idea of radical being at the root of things, going very deep, often at the core of our very understanding, and sometimes revealing things about ourselves we don't even want to be revealed. We just as soon not have to deal with. But there are some teachings like that that do go very deep, that they do challenge us in our hearts and our spirits. Last week, we talked about the command to love our enemies, and I confessed that I'm not particularly fond of that one. It's a difficult one for me, and I talked with several of you afterwards who admitted as well. It's something that you struggle with, but you found it convicting and something to be praying about and something to really be trying to resolve within your own heart and mind. But if we claim to love God, if we claim to love Jesus, if we claim to love His Word, we are to obey God. We are to obey Jesus. The Scripture is very clear about that. Love for God, in 1 John, it would tell us in chapter 5, is to obey His commands. Jesus would say in John 14 that if we love Him, we'll obey His teaching. So they go hand in hand. And that means even being obedient to those teachings, those commands that we don't particularly like or we find particularly hard, those that our flesh don't want to comply with. That's including a lot of things that are telling us to do things that are uncomfortable for us, but also telling us not to do things sometimes that go against our grain. One of the teachings that I want to talk about today is found in Luke 16, verse 13 through 15. It will be on the overhead for you if you want to follow along. Pay close attention to what Jesus has to say in this passage. He says there, "No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now the Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows your hearts. What is highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight." Now, this particular passage in Jesus' teaching is sandwiched between the parable of a shrewd business manager and the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Maybe you're familiar with those parables, those stories. I would encourage you, if you haven't read them lately, to go and do that. But I don't think it's by accident that Jesus addresses this right in between those two stories, because both of them involve the snare that an inordinate desire for money can become for us. In Matthew chapter 6, on the Sermon on the Mount, Luke 6 talks about the Sermon on the Plain. We find Jesus teaching the same principles, but in a little bit different context and some different wording. Once again, consider this. In Matthew chapter 6, in verse 19 beginning, he says this, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And he goes on to say, "The eye is a lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" And he says, "No one can serve two masters." That sound familiar? He says, either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, I will tell you that as many times as I've read through this passage, and as many times as I've talked to people about the concepts, and particularly I even shared the idea that the eyes are the light, the lamp for the body, I've shared that, I've not really seen the connection before. Jesus is talking about a perspective here about money, about wealth, that could darken our very souls. It can have such a dark and negative effect upon us that it could spiritually pitch us into darkness. And in Matthew, Jesus then goes into great length, and perhaps you're familiar with this section, where he talks about, don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, you know. Don't worry. Don't worry about your life even. He says, but instead you're supposed to trust God. Trust his provision. So get the context again. It's a trust issue. Really is a trust issue. Jesus is very insistent, isn't he, that we cannot love both God and money. We can't. You can't serve both. You can only serve one of them, he says. You can't be devoted to both. You can only be devoted to one. See, contextually, and you might say, well, wait a minute, he didn't say you can't love money. He said you can't serve money. But contextually, again, didn't he tie the two together with the idea of service and love and devotion? Again, even the idea that you have to love one and hate the other, or hate one and love the other. So we're talking about the same idea, that serving, loving, treasuring, being devoted to money or wealth. The King James Version uses the expression mammon. You can't be devoted to both God and mammon. Now, you might be a person saying, well, Pastor Steve, what are you talking about this? This is not an issue for me. You're going to talk about things that were issues for you, and you thought maybe for me too, but I don't have an issue with this. You know that the Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. You know that. You quote that. You know that. And you agree with the Beatles. You do. That you don't care too much for money because money can't buy you love. So you know, you don't have an issue. You don't have a problem with money, with wealth. You don't. Of course, if you're a Beatles fan, you know that that wasn't the only song they had about money. They had another one that said, Ma-ha-ha, honey, that's what I want. Now, it sounds like they couldn't make up their minds. They just weren't sure about it. Or maybe they were at extremes at different times in their thinking and thought process. But you know what? Isn't that us? If we are honest, isn't that us? That we have divided hearts and divided minds about money, about wealth, about possessions. And though you might be one again and say, well, I've wrestled with this, and I've got it licked, or I don't wrestle with this, then I ask you for just for a few moments to give some serious thought to some things. I want to ask you some questions. Don't want you to answer out loud. Just want you to answer in your own spirit as best you can what your responses would be to these questions. Do you ever daydream about inheriting or winning or finding a lot of money? And do you do that often? Have you ever entered Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes? More than once. And boy, it is so tempting now, I'm telling you, because they used to say you could win, you know, so much money, you know, a week, you know, for so many years. Then they would say, well, you could win so much money for a week for life. And then it went on to say you could win so much money a week for your life, and then you can leave it to a beneficiary for their life. Wow, that's not pretty. But you know what it is now? See, I get these emails. I get this junk mail. And boy, they really want me to enter this contest. Because now it's saying you could win so much money a week forever. That's the new one. Forever. Not just for your lifetime. Forever. Not just for your, you know, beneficiary's lifetime. Forever. Man. So you're going to go home and enter? Maybe you're going to do it right now on your cell phone. You know, your smartphone. Okay, I'm going to enter that right now. Because forever, I didn't know that. And you know, they say you don't have to buy anything. There's no risk involved, just enter. Of course, now you might not realize with that and so many other contests like that, they're submitting now your information to a whole bunch of other people. It's going to fill your emails with junk stuff, you know, and all kinds of offers and ploys. And sometimes it says, oh, you can enter this contest to win, but all you got to do is fill this survey out, and that survey says then you got to take one of our offers. There's all these things. Any of you ever followed those trails? No, none of you did. Okay. Never done that. Do you work to provide for your needs or to achieve or maintain a standard of living that's far above what you really need. Here's one. Are you in deep debt because of selfish, foolish choices? Are you stressed out over our economy? Do you fixate on it? Does it trouble you so much that it's in your conversation, in your thought process a lot? Would you say, well, no, I don't think a lot about money, but I do spend a lot of time looking with longing for things that I can't afford. Do you think that more money would solve most, if not all, of your problems? Do you spend more time in a given week maintaining your possessions than you do in strengthening your relationships with God and with others? Now, if your answer to any of these, even just one of them, was yes, you may have more of a problem than you think you do. I took this quiz last week on belief.net. It was about greed and supposed to reveal about whether or not you were a greedy person. My score indicated that I was more generous than greedy. But the fact that I'm even a little greedy is a red flag and an open door for a flood of issues. Why would I say that? Because on more than one occasion, Jesus warned us about that. He particularly warned a guy who was quibbling over an inheritance. You can read about it in Luke chapter 12. He said there, "Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Well, I'm just a little greedy. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Well, I'm not as greedy as some other people. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And if we look at the context here, we might think, well, Jesus is being a bit unfair, because all it was is this guy came up to him and said, hey, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me. That seems like a fair enough thing to ask. You know, I mean, wasn't he entitled to it? Probably was, at least to some extent. So what was wrong with his asking Jesus to tell his brother, share with me? Aren't we supposed to share? What was wrong with that? But Jesus, who knows the hearts of men, responded again with this idea, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And then he moved right into another parable about a man who foolishly built up his estate only to have his life prematurely ended, leaving all that he'd worked for and slaved for to someone else. So that was Jesus' response to him. As a matter of fact, Jesus even said, well, why do you make me an arbitrator? Why are you asking me to even be involved in this discussion, in this matter? Why do you ask me to make a judgment about it? And then he just warns him about greed. So what really struck me there is, even if I feel like I'm entitled to something, even if I feel like, you know, it'd only be fair for me to have something, if I let that possess me, if I let that capture my heart, if I let that drag me down, I've got a problem. The Hebrew writer also cautions us. And you read about this in chapter 13, verse 5. He says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Now, once again, the last part of that verse is a favorite of mine. To remember that God promises he will never leave me, never forsake me. And I will be honest, I've often shared it and quoted it out of context. Now, it's a principle, it's true, but what's it in regard to? The love of money. You see that? It's in regard to the love of money. And the language again, be on guard, keep your lives free. It seems to me, see this danger of becoming possessed by what we possess is serious. It is a big deal. A bigger deal maybe than we want to admit sometimes. But why? What is the big deal? Why is this such a problem? Well, God knows this. He created us. He knows our strengths and he knows our weaknesses, and he knows one of our weaknesses is we have a tendency to forget that he, God, is the one who gives us everything we have that is worth anything. And he also gives us the ability to work and produce wealth. That's what Deuteronomy 8:18 says. Matter of fact, the people were warned that once they went into the promised land, that they would be doing so well that they would forget that it was God who provided everything that they had, even the ability to work. How many of you recognize that if you have a job today, that's a blessing, and it's a blessing that God has provided? How many of you recognize that? But how often do we acknowledge that? Do we complain about our jobs? Do we complain about our work, or do we thank God for them? Do we complain about what we don't have, or thank God for what he's providing? There's a difference, isn't there? A huge difference. Instead of in God we trust, we've rooted our faith sometimes in our bank accounts, in our possessions, in what we've put aside for a rainy day. And we fail to acknowledge that he's the one who provides everything. And that's back to Matthew 6 again, right? Seek God first in the kingdom of God. And he'll give you the things that you need. He'll provide them. But he'll also provide opportunities for us to be productive and to work and to provide for ourselves and even bless us to provide for the needs of others. He's the one who blesses the works of our hands. Job recognized in his lifetime, you read about it in verse 21, where he recognized that God not only gives, though, he may also take away. Now, those who will dispute that you know, Job, they felt, didn't have the right perspective, and certainly he didn't know all that he should have known about God. They'll say, no, it was the devil who took away all of his possessions and all the things he'd been blessed with, and that's true, but God did allow him to do that. It was a test, but it was also meant to be a testimony. And sometimes it's in our tests of having things taken from us that the testimony really comes out. Maybe God would allow for something to be taken from us because we don't appreciate what we have. That we have taken it for granted. We've not expressed gratitude. Or maybe because we aren't good stewards of it. That we're using it selfishly. That we're not using it as he intended. Or maybe he would allow it to be taken away because we become too dependent upon our money and our possessions and no longer on him. Or maybe he would take it or allow it to be taken from us because we have become so fixated on that being our contentment that we've missed where true contentment is found. Or maybe he would even have it taken from us because, well, what we have, what we've gained, we've not done it in the right perspective, in the right manner, in the manner he would have prescribed. Proverbs 22, verse 7 says that the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is a slave to the lender. Anybody ever experienced that? That you've taken out a debt and then you know you're enslaved to that debt, you're committed to that debt, and boy, the things that you would like to do, you want to do, the blessings you'd like to enjoy, you just don't have anything for that because of the slavery that you have in the debt. And maybe sometimes God would want us to go through a process of, yes, being enslaved in the debt long enough to learn that I don't want to be like this again. I don't want to be enslaved this way again. I want to be responsible about what God gives me. He has a lot to say about that, a lot more than you might think in his word. But I have some good news for you. I want you to listen to Jesus in Luke 6, verse 38. That's where he says this. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be poured in your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now, pay close attention to this. We talked about God being a provider. We talked about having the right perspective about money. But better, the right perspective about God. Understand this. God gives to givers. That's what this is saying. God gives to givers, and he outgives givers. It doesn't say he gives to hoarders. It doesn't say he gives to selfish people. It doesn't say he gives to those people who have the wrong perspective about wealth and money, does it? He gives to who? Givers. Yet this passage has been used to perpetuate what is often called the prosperity gospel. You know, the idea, well, God gives the giver, so I'll give a little and God's going to give me a bunch. And then I'll be well-to-do, I'll be wealthy, I'll be rich, and God wants me to be rich. He does want for us to be taken care of, and he wants us to have more than our needs met. He wants us to have enough to help to meet the needs of others. He does. But if it were the case that God wanted to give to us as we give and give us so much more and for us to hold on to it so we would be rich, then I think somehow or another the apostles missed that. Somehow they missed that teaching, and he taught them directly. They misunderstood that evidently because, you know what, they all died as paupers. Because whatever he gave them, guess what they did with it? They gave it away. And he gave more, and guess what they do with it? They give it away. And it appears like they died in the giving mode, not the receiving mode. But they would teach us that they received far more in the reward in heaven than they ever gave away on earth. God wants for his children to be rich in faith. He wants us to be rich in faith. He wants us to learn, though, that if our focus is gaining material wealth, we may obtain it, but we're never truly going to be able to enjoy it. We're never truly going to be able to enjoy the fruit of the labors as God intended for us to. And we're going to miss out on the real security of having the perspective about money and dependence where it needs to be. And it's really finding security in God. Security in him. The security that he offers. Because if you've lived any time at all and you've had any dealings with finances, do you know it can be easy come, easy go? And sometimes hard come and still easy go. Still really hard come, but easy go. It's here today, gone tomorrow. And there's no security, it doesn't seem to be, in our finances. But when we look for our security, our contentment, our satisfaction to be in that, then we're going to miss where true security and contentment and satisfaction is found. The proper perspective is this. Are you ready? We're not to serve money. It's to serve us as we serve God and others. I'll say that again. We are not to serve money. It's to serve us as we serve God and others. That's the right perspective. We're not to love money, but love the one who provides what we need and provides the money, provides the necessities of life, and so much more. We're to love the blesser, not the blessing. And sometimes, listen carefully, the only thing that reveals the truth about where our hearts are, where our hearts rest, where our treasure really is when we go through lean times. Sometimes that's the test that will bring out the testimony. Who are we? Where are our hearts? In lean times, in tough times, in difficult times. Where are our hearts? Let me illustrate a little bit. I love the things my wife Nina does for me. Most of you who know me and know her know she spoils me. I am a blessed man. Believe me, I am. But a while back, she had both her knees replaced. You know that too. If you've been with us for any length of time, you know that. And suddenly, all of a sudden, you know, some of the things that she did for me, I had to do by myself. And I even had to do some stuff for her that she always did for me. I had to do some shopping. I had to prepare meals. I had to wash clothes. I had to tidy the house. Man, did I still love her? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And sometimes, see, the test of relationship is whether you really love someone is in when you are in the mode where they're not doing for you. You are doing for them. That it's not about what you get. It's about what's in your heart and what you give. I love the way she holds me. I think there's a song about that. I love the sweet things she says to me. I even love the not so sweet things she says to me sometimes when I need to be corrected. But I particularly love the sweet things. But what if by some tragedy she was left without the ability to do that? Without the ability to express love for me in physical or even verbal ways? What if that happened? Will I still love her? Would I still serve her? If not, I may not have really loved her at all. Now you see the correlation with God? Is that if we only love him because of what he's doing for us, then we've missed the point. We need to really check, do I really love him, or do I love the money, the possessions, the blessings that he is giving me? And if that dries up, then so does my love. And that's not really love, is it? It really isn't. So the test that brings the testimony is so often in the lean times. And God may allow for the lean times. Not to punish us. Maybe not even to teach us. But for others, like he did in Job's case, to see that, you know what? Their relationship with God is real. They really do believe in him and love him and are devoted to him no matter what. And that commitment is real. See, it's so easy to love, serve, and be devoted to wealth, money, possessions, the empowerment that we expect those things to bring to us. But I personally believe, again, certainly that's not what God wants, and I believe that tithing, here we go, now they thought, he'll get around to that, here's the pastor, here's the preacher, he's talking about money, he's got to get around to tithing, it's coming. You know, they never talk about money at church unless it's going to be put your hand in your pocket and give to the church. Well, hold on a minute. I really do believe that tithing is one of the ways that God has chosen to teach us to keep things in check. It moves us from trust in money to trust in God. It's one of those things, again, that helps keep us anchored and remembering who's the provider, who's the one who I'm serving, who's the one whom I love. So yes, I believe that's true. But I want to challenge you a bit farther on this, just, and we're going to be closing here in a second. I have an exercise for you, okay? In real practical terms, this next 7 days, you'll make it short so you know you don't feel, you know, like, man, I can do this forever. Start maybe one day at a time, okay? But the next time that you feel compelled to spend money on yourself for something you don't need, or pull out the charge card to get something you don't need, stop. And I would suggest if it's a charge card for something you don't need, just put that thing back in your wallet or your purse or in your desk or cut that thing up. If you don't need it. It can be great for emergencies, it can be great for needs, but God, you don't become enslaved to the debt, remember? And if it's money, if it's money out of you've got a debit card, or it's coming out of your pocket, or your purse, or your wallet, or your bank account in some other way, when you feel compelled, you know, you feel the temptation to spend something on yourself for something, again, you don't need, do this instead. Make a decision to just give that away. Oh, you don't need it. I guarantee you there's somebody who does. So give it away. And this time I'm not saying give it to the church. Maybe you want to give it to Carpenter's Place or Rock River Pantry or the Rescue Mission. Maybe you want to designate it for a missionary. Or maybe, here's a challenge for you, take that money and this pocket you took it out of, put it back in the other pocket, earmark it somehow, pray about it, pray over it. But God, who do you want me to give this to? And I would suggest to you from our teaching last week is don't even give it to somebody you know. Say, God, reveal to me somebody who needs this that I don't know, and there's no way that I'm going to get anything back from it. It's not where I'm going to, you know, receive anything back from it. And then as you go through your day, go through your week, when God moves you, whether it's a waitress who you can just tell, boy, something in your spirit says she's down on her luck. She's having a rough time. Or that somebody in Walmart that you see in the checkout line, you know, that they just are putting stuff back because they don't have the money to buy what appears to be some essentials. And then just say, I feel like the Lord told me to give you this. And then just walk away. And just walk away. Well, then what am I going to do? Well, then the Lord's going to put some money in your other pocket. That's what he says. Because he gives to givers. Right? That's what he does. Will you go hungry? No. Remember, this is money you don't need anyway. Right? Why am I telling you to do this? Because it will change your perspective. It will bless you because God will bless you. He'll bless you in ways you can't imagine. Not only will he take care of your needs, as he promises he will, more importantly, he's going to help you to see what money is really for. Why he really blesses us with it. To be givers. Yes, to take care of our needs, but to be givers. And you know, it's hard to give something away that you love. Isn't it? Hard to give away something that you love. It's hard to give away something that you're really attached to. It's hard to give away something that you treasure. So the process, God will also be dealing with your heart about, am I too attached to this? If you're saying right now, you know, I'm not doing this. This is stupid. I'm not giving my money away to some stranger. You can't love both God and money. You can't serve both God and money. You can't be devoted to both God and money. You can't. It's not a matter of it's hard. You can't. Now, that's hard for me because I want to say, yeah, but God, I can handle it. You know, God, I can handle it. I can handle that publisher's clearinghouse. I could handle that. I could handle $1 million. I could handle a lot. I could handle a lot more, God, than what I've got. I could handle it. And he might be saying, you've shown me how you handle it. But Jesus would also teach, until we're faithful over a few things, don't expect more. And what does faithful over a few things mean? Being good stewards with it. Have the right perspective about it. And then, yes, giving to others' needs. Hard teaching, but a true teaching. And one that we need to wrestle with.